Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
In October 2016, Ray Dove claims that she and two friends traveled to the Joshua Tree National Park to camp. All of them had an interest in ufology and hoped something would happen on their trip. On the first night, while lying in her tent, Dove was awakened by a large bug crawling across her face. Thinking it might be a spider, she immediately sprang up, grabbed the bug off her face, and tossed it. "I could hear it hit the side of the tent. It was that big," she noted. She began to fall back asleep. She felt guilty or something and thought about removing the bug from the tent, but was tired. "I suddenly woke up again, feeling that same squishy bug walking across my face, however this time with more composure and care I gently pulled the mystery bug off my face. I did that and placed it on the floor of my tent and shined my flashlight on it to see what it actually was. It was the largest ant I have ever seen. It must have been half an inch long." She noted that it was a transparent golden color. "Not your normal everyday red and black little ants walking around, for sure. This ant definitely didn't resemble the little red ants I had seen earlier that day outside our camp." She gently scooped it up and put it outside. That morning they all left. The very next day, a Saturday, they decided to return that night and do another camp out. They went off the main road far into the heart of the park. It was a bumpy dirt road in the middle of nowhere. "We found a spot next to a small dried-out wash to one side of us and tall bushes surrounding us. We set up our chairs facing each other as we meditated, something we practice in order to raise our consciousnesses for sharper perception," she noted. Soon, the person sitting to her left, via his third eye vision, told her that two bright basketball-sized light flashes were going off next to her about 3 feet off the ground and 15 minutes apart. Dove, of course, could not see anything, but she began to feel something, and it was weird. I could feel in the back of my head, this is similar to what some would refer to as hair raising. It felt like someone was standing directly behind me. About this time I said out loud, "They're here." The person seated next to Dove noted that he could feel them too. We didn't know who they were, but intuitively knew that non-human beings were very near us. We could feel their presence. Dove attempted to communicate in her mind, and at one point felt a connection, though it felt emotionless. This being felt void of any strong feelings that I could pick up on, although there did seem to be a hint of curiosity on his part, she recalled. With my eyes closed, I saw the being, with what some would call your third eye or intuitive vision. I only saw the outlining shape of the being's head. It was like that of an elongated upside-down triangle. At the same time, the person sitting next to me also intuitively picked up on a feeling of an insect with an elongated upside-down triangular head as well. Then, with my eyes still closed, I saw in my inner vision an approaching tall, maybe 6-foot non-human being walking down the wash that was directly in front of me up towards the person to my left. Surprised, I opened my eyes and could still see the being approaching. According to Dove, the being seemed to be phasing in and out ever so slightly as he walked. He had his head turned to the side, looking directly at me. It was as if he was not actually touching the ground as he walked, but was gliding over it smoothly like on an elevator belt. He stopped within 2 feet of the person to my left, then turned slightly towards me, almost brushing against the person's side, which was felt on the arm of my fellow participant as a light brush. The being then phased out. I could no longer see him for a moment. Then suddenly I sensed the being standing directly in front of me, very close and watching me intently. It felt like a presence of warm energy. I could strongly sense the energy of this being. Dove attempted to communicate in her mind with the being, pushing thoughts of benevolence and peace. He was still looking straight at me. His body then faded out, leaving only the outline of his head with large, round, dark, shiny eyes. I then asked him telepathically, "Who are you?" As I waited for a response, his face slowly moved closer to mine until it stopped just 1 foot away from mine. He drew in closer still as his face phased out completely, leaving only his 2 dark eyes at eye level with my own eyes, fixated on mine keenly and piercing me as though he was trying to read me. I would open my eyes, then close them, then open them again, but his eyes were still there. His eyes drew in closer still, and in an intensely piercing fashion, he said to me, slowly telepathically, "We are of the Earth, and from the Earth, we are from an ancient line going back eons." Then his eyes dissolved into the night as I started feeling this strong connection, like connecting the dots from this being and that mysterious gold ant that was in my tent the night before. I would see this ant like being in my mind, and then the visual would suddenly switch back to the ant, then back to the being again. This repeated several times back and forth. I felt a great respect for this being and the ant equally. We all sat in stillness and quietness for quite a while afterward, feeling the being's continued presence surrounding us. It felt as though there was more than one insectoid-like being there with us. In the years since her experience, she wondered if the being she saw was connected to the Hopi ant people. Could these ant-like insectoid beings that I met not be confused with mantis-like beings, greys or other similarly described beings, possibly be the same ant people of the legends and lore of the Hopi and other indigenous peoples? I believe that this is entirely possible, and I get a strong sense that after my experience with them, this is the case. The Hopi people have described ant-like beings that were friendly and helpful and acted as teachers. They were kind and were ultra-peaceful people. The one I met certainly fit all of these characteristics. Oh man, my stepbro and I did this a lot. We've seen the gambit from ball lightning to ghost lanterns drifting through fields. We heard drum beats in the night and even got locked into a barn when no one else was around. Thay was back before he nearly drank himself to death. Creepiest thing I've seen on a night hike, though. HRM. Gonna give this one to the hunting lodge. So, my bro and I sat on this fence about a half mile put from the lodge at night, and we would just talk about life. Being in the middle of nowhere, the moon lit things up just enough that you could see things mostly clearly. Well, as we're talking, this light suddenly turns on in the smallest room of the lodge. This room is at the end of a hallway, too, and is one that's notorious for shit going down in. We're talking housekeepers hearing footsteps coming down the hall towards the room, radios turning on and off, the works. Well, on goes the light. We go quiet and stare at it. You see that too? Yep. It just turned on, right? Yep. We watch for a long time, debating on if we should investigate. We decide not to, as the folks leasing the lodge don't really like us. No need to spook some random person at 2 a.m. We watched that thing for a solid hour or so, and then suddenly it turned off. All right. Cool. Party's over. Next night comes around and same thing. Only this time we're armed with knowledge. We have confirmed via the ranch foreman that Noah's there. He swung by to check after hearing our story. Well, we decided to be brave. We went to check it out. We has to stand on tippy toes to peer in the window. And F me if it isn't the damn TV on a static channel. We did not like that. We buggered right out of there. Right when we got back to our good old fence posts, the thing turned off. F this. We tell the foreman the next day, who happens to be my grandfather. He stares at us, as if calculating his response. Not possible. I turned the power off yesterday. Tree was rubbing on the lines and causing sparks. Almost caused a fire. When we turn off power, we legitimately kill it. As in, the lines going into the house were dead thanks to a kill switch installed in key locations by PGE. My grandfather checked the place out after that, couldn't get the TV to turn on. He advised us to just steer clear for a bit. We went out again, after a few nights of avoiding our nighttime hikes. Nothing happened until we went to hike home. Suddenly the light came on. That was the last time we saw that static light from the TV. But man, did it leave us not wanting to see it ever again. In the summer of 2014, I was driving around the lake roads of Vilas County in northern Wisconsin with a friend, late at night. We come up to this white owl sitting in the middle of the road. I might have thought nothing of it, except that it didn't move. I stopped my car in front of it, tried honking and flashing my lights, and it just stared us down. So I crept around it. We get up the road about 2 miles more and turn a corner. There in the middle of the road is this really long, slender, white figure sprawled out, taking up nearly the entire span of the street. My friend and I freaked out. I swear she even yelled, "Alien?" From a distance, it did distinctly look like a humanoid figure, with a notable shoulder formation and limbs. So I drive up a little closer to it, and it becomes clear that the thing is another white owl, with its wings spread out like it is dead or taking a defensive posture. I'm not sure. I had to drive partly in the grass to get around it. The whole time my friend freaked out. Go, 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 go. Let's get back into town. Looking back, there are definitely a couple strange things about that incident other than the weird coincidence of seeing two white owls behaving strangely out there in a region where white owls aren't that common. The first weird thing is that the way the figure appeared to us from a distance was so different from what it became when we got up close. My brain doesn't really like processing it. The other weird thing is that the figure was so long. I don't think that any owl has a wingspan as long as this wingspan would have had to be for it to take up the entire road like that. Then about 3 weeks later, I was with two different friends, driving around again. I had my window down, and a white owl swooped down from the trees. You could see it leaving the trees from the front windshield, but there was no time to react before it nearly flew into my open window. I remember seeing its face there, like inches from mine in that split second before it veered back up. This was shortly before I developed really bad anxiety for the first time. I got home one night that summer after I'd been out pretty late, and I had a sore throat. So I looked in the mirror, and in the back of my throat, on the wall just past the uvula, was a hole, about the size of a pencil eraser. It was a very perfect shape, and it had smooth edges like it wasn't a wound. There was no pus around it, no bleeding. It made no sense at all. I understandably freaked out, rushed in, and made my mom look I was about 18, still living with my mom. She didn't believe me at first, but then I remember seeing the look on her face go from skepticism to horror when she actually peered inside my mouth. But when we got to the hospital, whatever had been wrong with my throat was fixed. There was no evidence that a hole had ever been back there, aside from my mom and I both insisting there was. The doctor basically treated us both like we were crazy and said it was physically impossible for there to be a disappearing hole in the mouth. After that, I had horrible anxiety for years. I quit smoking and developed an OCD-like obsession with washing my hands and checking my throat. That mystery was never solved, and it's honestly a really horrible moment in my life that's taken me years to come to terms with. Do you believe that the white owls were harbingers and, or the cause of the strange incidents? For a few years in my early 20s, I was living on the East Coast. My area ran right along the Blue Ridge Mountains, and I'd often go on short day hikes with a few friends along the marked paths in the afternoons when we were all free. A few times I'd gone alone, but I always kept to the same few areas and knew my way around well. On this particular day, I'd waited a little later into the afternoon for my friends so we could go up the trails, but they ended up busy and I, feeling fat after a whole pizza for lunch with soda, decided to get in the car and go hike it off by myself to ease my guilty conscience. There's some particular trails I like to use. They shoot you straight up an incline to get your cardio in quick and hard. And then an adjoining, smaller path winds you back down around the other side of the face. About a third of the way down, there's trees to the right and a steep-ish hill on the left that drops down to a low spot where I could usually spot deer herds and fun stuff. I struggled going up that day, and I'd waited later than usual, so it was probably close to 7:07, 10 p.m. by the time I reached the fork and turned back downhill. Mid-fall, this meant it was fairly dark by that time. As I'm walking, I notice a person in the valley. She had on a long, pinky white dress, and by the way she was changing positions and shuffling around, it looked like she was in the middle of a photo shoot. I couldn't see the photographer, and it was a little late for photos, but I figured the camera person was probably in the tree line, and that they were likely finishing up after golden hour. I stopped to watch for a second, thinking how great a spot it was for some really awesome pictures. All of a sudden, it was as if she fell. She didn't lower herself. There was no crouching or sitting motion. It was more like watching a glitch in real life. She was standing, and then she was face down on the ground with her legs bent up under her body. I got this really awful feeling all of a sudden, like shivers down my neck. Without taking my eyes off her, she started crawling on all fours right up the hill towards the trail I was on. She wasn't on her knees, though. She was basically running on her hands and feet. Maybe I was just freaked out, but she was closing in far faster than it seemed like she should have been. It was almost like she'd been sped up, but the rest of the world was still moving by just the same. I wish I could say I'd pulled my phone out and gotten video evidence, or at least taken a picture, or been brave and kicked some spooky ass, but I was suddenly overcome with an intense feeling of danger and I fell, ran the rest of the way back to the parking lot without looking back even once. I peeled out of there and haven't gone back since. The weirdest part is that my car had been the only one in the lot when I got back to it, and that area isn't super accessible by any other park and hike type trailheads that I know of. I wrote it off as crazy drugs and nothing more, but I don't know. I told my friends, and a few of them went out later that night to investigate super duper smart idea, I know, but nobody has even seen anything like that out there since. I was in the military, and we made enemy contact on the side of a major highway that ran through the whole country. There was a convoy being attacked, so we went to help and took up positions on the east side of the highway, using a dried-up canal bank as cover. My HMMV was equipped with 50 caliber and an LRA's thermal image surveillance device. Our platoon took up our positions and fired on the enemy. Our fire devastated these dudes. Not to be graphic, but we observed these dudes literally falling apart in the thermal imaging. It was nighttime and the call was made that we had to wait until first light to do the battle damage assessment due to these particular insurgents booby-trapping their positions with mines and IEDs. The thought was that we could see better in the morning and see tripwires or disturbed earth and pressure plates better and avoid any possible traps. We overwatched the enemy's positions all night and not a thing moved or was seen until dawn. We loaded up and went to assess the area. When we got there, there was no bodies, no shell casings, not a drop of blood anywhere. It made the hair on my neck stand up. We had watched their bodies basically explode that night, and there was no trace anyone had been there at all besides some water bottles and cigarette butts. Now, they did have a concealed route to the position we were not aware of until dawn, and this particular group of insurgents was known to collect their dead to avoid us finding them. And for superstitious reasons, but damn. Not a drop of blood anywhere. That particular event was the eeriest, and has stuck with me ever since. It was in 2006. On June 3rd or maybe 4th, 2011, I was camping with a good friend of mine. We had hiked approximately 12 miles into the Lost Creek Wilderness area following the Colorado Trail from where Section 4 starts at Wellington Lake Road. We reached what is referred to as the Meadow and decided to set up camp for the night. The elevation gain had been significant, and we were beaten. Well, I was beat because I wasn't in the greatest shape for backpacking in the backcountry. We got camp set up, gathered firewood, and ate our dinners of dehydrated mountain house food. As it got darker, we got the fire going and were standing around talking. The sky was super dark, and the only sounds around were from the campfire and our own voices. I remember that I could see more stars than I ever had before. The light pollution was incredibly low. My friend and I were working for an aerospace company and started talking about the satellites we had been building and wondered if we could see any satellites in the super dark sky. We didn't have to wait long. We were able to see one after another. We could see so many that eventually the novelty of it wore off. We stopped watching the sky and were facing each other talking about regular life, when out of nowhere, we were completely encircled by an intense beam of light. This light formed a perfectly circular pattern on the ground. Part of the beam was in the trees next to us. But because of the pattern, the light had to have a point of origin directly above us. There was no oval in the beam pattern, as if the beam came from a side. It was perfectly centered on us. This beam was probably 10-20 yards in diameter. It was incredibly bright. It was a cool white color, like a 5600K LED light. There was no diffusion of light at the perimeter. It was incredibly defined. My friend and I were completely illuminated and were staring right at each other. We just kind of froze. The beam lasted about 2 to 3 seconds. I immediately retrieved my cell phone from my pocket and checked the time. I felt like I should in case we had missing time. The time was about what it should have been, somewhere in the 2 a.m. hour. I do not believe we had any missing time. I asked my friend if he had seen the light. I wanted to confirm that what I had just seen was in fact there, and not because I was suffering from a sudden brain aneurysm. He in fact confirmed that yes, the intense spotlight that I had witnessed was real, and that he had seen it too. We immediately began trying to explain what had just happened. We yelled out in the darkness, "Hello," there was no response. We scanned the woods and meadow as best we could by flashlight and could see no one. We both knew that the light came from above. We knew that it didn't come from a flashlight from the side. I think we were just trying to make ourselves feel better about what had happened. Now, during this entire encounter, it had been quiet out there. Just the fire and our voices. No other people, no vehicles, there wasn't even any air traffic. It was just completely, dead quiet. In later years, I have wondered if perhaps this was a directed beam from a personal drone. I can quickly dismiss this, as once again, there was no noise whatsoever. Also, during this time frame, drones weren't nearly as popular or common as they are today. Anyhow, we continued trying to ease our nerves by coming up with explanations that could never be. The best I could come up with is that a bolide had entered the atmosphere and had a trajectory directly above us, heading perfectly straight down towards us. Yes, this was an absurd explanation, but I could not, and cannot explain what this light had been from. I am still completely baffled by this. There are times I will message my friend out of nowhere and ask him if he remembers this event. He clearly does remember and responds with something like, "Oh, you mean that night we got probed? Of course, I remember." The probe talk is in jest, but we clearly encountered something that night. I will forever wonder what illuminated us so incredibly brightly that dark, quiet night. I would love to know, but maybe it's better that I don't. I was an owner-operator in trucking. My husband knew I had had a lot of unusual things happen to me in my life. Thank goodness he believed in me, so he didn't criticize me. Here is my story. It was the night of August 2, 2017. We had traveled in separate rigs from Chicago, Illinois, and were cutting across this bridge in the boonies. We were about 70 miles west of the city in Lee County, Illinois. It was a low-weight bridge. I don't remember the road name or designation, but instead of turning around and backtracking many miles, he decided that we would cross this bridge. Not liking the idea, I agreed, and he said he would go first just in case something happened. "Okay," I said. He crossed the bridge. Now let me say this. It was indeed a small road, and after crossing, there was barely any room to turn right and bring the trailer behind you and not hit the side of the cut. Okay, so after he crossed safely, he said, "Be careful. The road is barely there and a really tight turn." So I followed and I spoke to him over the CB and told him that he was right and that was tight. That is when he asked me if had I seen that thing on top of the bridge. He told me, "I don't see how you could miss it. It was like some big being of some kind in a crouched position with really big red eyes glowing brightly." I joked with him. That is why they call me a detective, because nothing gets by me. I was joking but knew he didn't joke about this kind of stuff. So he described it again as a large person or human-like shape sitting on top of this bridge with red glowing eyes. He was serious. Now I don't know if this thing was warning us or protecting us, but it happened, and that is that. In this memory, I am sitting in front of the TV, and it's a hot summer night. We didn't have air conditioning, and all the windows were open. I was watching TV alone very late, and the house was very quiet. This in itself was strange because my parents did not allow us to watch TV late, even in the summer. It was also next to impossible to be in any place in the house without a crowd, because I come from a large family, and the house was always noisy. I remember having a strong feeling to look outside. I went to the front door and looked out the screen. I saw a large dark vehicle parked outside. It wasn't right in front of our house, but was closer to an empty house. I couldn't see the
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Make of it. It was black, and the windows were too dark to see inside. It looked like a gangster car out of maybe the 1930s. I thought it weird that it was parked on our street, but some of the guys in the neighborhood were into muscle cars, so maybe it wasn't that weird. It was very quiet outside, and there were no lights at the neighbors' houses. The night air reminded me of how it feels right before a thunderstorm. Suddenly, I'm in the car. But oddly, the light is on inside, and there are a number of people with me. We are sitting in rows of seats, and there is a yellow-orange light filling the vehicle. I look around at the faces in the car, but no one is looking back at me. They seem familiar, but not like relatives. The vehicle appeared to have a large number of us inside, maybe 15-20, but the inside was not that big. Suddenly I was aware that the vehicle had been moving, although I couldn't feel anything at all. Soon I realized we were stopping and at another house. I remember standing inside as a tall, thin figure held the hand of a person in pajamas leading them out of the room. Two people were sitting on a couch watching TV as I stood there, but they seemed in a daze, totally indifferent to us being there. Then I was in the vehicle again, and we were sitting inside very still. Somehow, I was able to look out the wall of the vehicle and saw we were moving over a grassy area that was very muddy. It was very dark outside, but it smelled like muddy water, and it occurred to me that we were near the river. There were no buildings around us, just overgrown areas of trees and grass. I saw some cattails and some gorges under us. There must have been streams off of the river. At this time of the year, you would often be hearing the crickets very loud at night and see the fireflies all over. But it was dead silent, and I didn't notice any of the fireflies around. The vehicle was moving, but not rolling like a car. It seemed to be hovering above the ground. I turned from looking outside to looking back inside and realized there was a front seat to the vehicle, and there were two people sitting in front. All of a sudden, one turned and looked back at me, and it was a beautiful golden-haired child. He couldn't have been more than a year or two, wearing a diaper. He resembled statues of the baby Jesus I have seen in church. There was a warm glow about him, and I remember the curls touching his pink, rosy cheeks. He was talking to us, and some of the people next to me seemed to relax and a few sighed. But as I was sitting there, I thought something was wrong. Something didn't feel right. The words he was speaking were in my head, but they were bothering me. The sounds bounced around my skull and echoed, giving me a headache. For a baby, there was something cold and distant about him. I shook my head and looked at the figure speaking. There was a fuzziness in front of him. It was like a television screen in front of him that was losing its signal. I reached out to touch him, and he backed away. As the image flickered in front of me, I saw another figure. It was small and brown, and the head was a weird shape. It had large eyes, wider than long, and ridges around its eyes like oversized lids. I had a frightened thought that something really terrible was standing in front of me. The face of the baby Jesus stabilized, and I felt my body go cold. Baby Jesus looked deeply into my eyes, leaned toward me, and I broke loose and punched it in the face. I didn't think about punching it. I seemed to do it instinctively. I think I saw a flash, and then I must have blacked out. I guess I forgot about it until a few months later. My family drove down to a riverfront park to celebrate some relative's birthday. I was walking on a path close to the river and could smell the strong smell of the muddy water. I glanced around and saw a bunch of cattails. Suddenly, I remembered it. The gangster car, the yellow-orange light, the people watching TV, the baby Jesus, the strange-headed being, and the punch. I never told anyone about this event. There were so many things about it that were too ridiculous. In 1971, I couldn't make any sense of it or place it in any category if I tried. I have never considered it a dream because it was too real. I have other strange memories about the house I grew up in, but many are not as vivid as this one. I recently moved back into the house, and I started thinking about this event again. I don't really know what to do with the memory. I made some sketches about what I remember. The baby Jesus figure was like a little glowing angel, but there was something very distant about it. The weird being had a tan, light brown, dry skin. It didn't look like any of the gray aliens I've seen in pictures. When I hit it, it was like hitting a turkey with dry skin. The black car seemed to dip in the back and seemed to hug the street when it was parked outside the house. The night had descended upon the quiet town of Eden Falls, Minnesota, casting long shadows across the desolate streets. As I, Officer Jake Anderson, responded to the call that would change the course of my life, I could feel a shiver run down my spine, an ominous premonition of the horrors that awaited me. The crime scene was a gruesome tableau, the air thick with an unspoken malevolence. The first victim lay sprawled on the cold, unforgiving pavement. His lifeless eyes stared into the void, and a grotesque symbol, carved meticulously on his chest, whispered of unspeakable rituals. A pentagram, drawn in blood, surrounded his lifeless form like a macabre frame. The investigation began as a puzzle with pieces scattered in the shadows. I delved into the victim's life, discovering he was a member of a secretive society that delved into the arcane and the occult. They were scholars of forbidden knowledge, keepers of an ancient book that held secrets that should have remained buried. The path twisted and turned as I followed the clues, connecting the dots that led me to the other members of the society. Each interview revealed a piece of the puzzle, a dark mosaic that depicted a ritual gone awry. The members had sought to summon an entity of unimaginable power, but the tables had turned, and the malevolent force had turned on them, leaving a trail of death in its wake. As the bodies piled up, it became clear that the cult leader, the mastermind behind the doomed ritual, was the sole survivor. Driven by a sinister determination, he hunted down his former comrades, killing them one by one to complete the summoning and curry favor with the entity they had unleashed. It was a race against time, a deadly game of cat and mouse. With every step, I could feel the malevolence closing in, the veil between our world and the other side thinning. I tracked the cult leader to the final ritual site, a desolate and forgotten place with an air thick with dark energy. The scene that unfolded before me was a nightmare incarnate. The cult leader, draped in black robes, stood before a grotesque altar, a sacrificial victim bound and trembling in fear. The air hummed with an otherworldly presence as the cult leader chanted ancient incantations, his eyes ablaze with unholy fervor. I moved in, determined to stop the impending horror. But the cult leader was no ordinary adversary. Cunningly laid traps ensnared me, and I found myself wounded and weakened, struggling to keep pace with the impending catastrophe. The walls echoed with the agonized cries of the kidnapped soul, a desperate plea for salvation. Summoning every ounce of strength, I staggered forward, my gun drawn. The cult leader's twisted grin widened as he neared the culmination of his dark ritual. With a surge of adrenaline, I fired, the shot echoing through the desolate landscape. The cult leader crumpled to the ground, his grip on the ritual shattered. The air seemed to ripple with relief as the entity's hold waned, and the sacrificial victim, now freed from the clutches of impending doom, escaped the altar of despair. I stumbled backward, my gaze fixed on the surreal scene unfolding before me. With trembling hands, I radioed for backup, struggling to find words to describe the horrors I had witnessed. The town that had once been peaceful now bore witness to a darkness that lingered in the shadows. I couldn't fathom the true nature of the malevolent force we had faced, but I knew one thing for certain: Eden Falls would never be the same again. Before I begin, I think it would be both necessary and appropriate to give a bit of background information on myself. I am a 34-year-old woman who has been working in the wilderness since I was 18, and who spent my childhood growing up basically off the grid with my family in the middle of the woods. My father owned a logging company in Oregon, and my mother was a very outdoorsy woman who enjoyed the quiet and solitude of living 30-plus miles away from the closest town. Although I have plenty of stories of strange experiences from my childhood, I am going to share some of the things I have encountered more recently during my 16-year and counting career. I have worked all over the United States with pretty much every branch of government that oversees federally owned lands, the National Park Service, U.S. Forest Service, Bureau of Land Management, etc., though most of my time has been spent in the western half of the U.S. In all of the positions I have worked, I have spent a majority of my time outside in the wilderness, often either alone or with a small group of coworkers. For discretion purposes, I won't disclose my exact current job title, but my job duties basically include wilderness surveying, trail maintenance, wildlife management, and aiding in search and rescue. I consider myself a rational, level-headed person, and I don't scare easily. I have always been the type of person to figure out a scientific explanation for everything. However, sometimes, especially when you are out in the wilderness, there are things you see and experience that seem to defy all logical explanation. These are the stories I will be sharing with you. This first story comes from my first summer on the job with the National Park Service NPS when I turned 18. Now, some of you may know how insanely competitive it is to get a job with the NPS, but my resume was chock full with relevant experience I had gained while growing up. So I was one of the few lucky ones who got a job with them right out of high school. The job I landed was at a historic site in rural northern New Mexico that is important for its Native American heritage. It was an entry-level labor and maintenance job, and I was going to be doing a lot of grunt work. But I was excited as hell for the opportunity nonetheless. The beginning of the summer went by pretty uneventfully. I got to know all my coworkers, heard all the classic, scare the rookie stories they tell us newbies, especially ones new to the region, as I was, and learned everything there was to know about the local legends and cultures of past and present. As the summer went on, I was assigned more and more tasks, due to the usual wear and tear that comes with the height of tourist season. The days were long and the desert sun is strong, so as the summer progressed and my boss began to trust me more, I would often wait until the sun was beginning to set to do my hardest tasks that would require the most time outside in the desert heat, and I would often work well into the night. But I liked it better that way. Aside from dodging the sun, it was nice to work outside when the park was quiet and void of tourists. Early afternoon one day, about mid-August, we had a few hikers come into the office to report that the previous night's monsoon had caused a creek to swell up and the rushing water had done some minor damage to one of the small bridges the park had built to cross the creek. Luckily, the hikers had taken pictures of the damage, so I didn't have to hike all the way out to the bridge to assess it, which was about 7 miles down the trail from the parking lot. My boss put me on the job and sent me into town to get the materials I would need to fix the bridge, and by the time I returned, it was already late afternoon. My boss gave me the go-ahead to work into the evening instead of waiting until the next morning to begin, and since it was a beautiful, clear day, I decided to bring along my tent and camp out there overnight under the stars. By the time I had hiked all the way out to the bridge, the sun was setting. Even though it was a 7-mile hike, it was all relatively flat, so it went by quickly. The spot where the bridge was at was about 1/3 mile into where the trail enters the base, some breathtaking canyons. I chose a spot that was slightly elevated from the creek to set up my tent, just in case it was to swell again from some unexpected rains overnight, even though the sky was still crystal clear. Once my tent was set up, I made a small fire and decided to cook dinner before getting started on the bridge. While I cooked and ate, the last bit of sunlight dipped below the horizon, and the canyon lit up from the glow of my fire. It was a beautiful night, and the moon was almost full, so there was plenty of light for me to work by. As I began working on the bridge, I noticed how beautifully the light from the campfire behind me was dancing and making shapes on the canyon walls across the creek, and I laughed briefly at how distorted my silhouette was being projected onto the walls. I started hammering away, and for a while, everything was going normally. However, after about 20 minutes, I got an uneasy feeling, like I was being watched. I stopped for a minute and stood up and looked around, but I knew I was completely alone in that portion of the canyon, so I shook off the uneasiness and kept working. To get my mind off it, I began to hum a little tune that I was pretty much just making up as I went along, and before I knew it, the hammering and humming had replaced any fearful thoughts in my mind. 30 or so minutes later, the feeling like I was being watched returned, although this time it was much stronger. I was due for a break anyway, so I decided to stop working for a bit and return to my campsite to make myself some hot tea. As soon as I stopped hammering, I noticed the canyon fell silent. And I mean, completely silent. There was no sound of bugs, no wind, no anything. The only thing I could hear was the crackling of my campfire and the sound of my own breath and heartbeat. I stood up, and right as I was about to turn to walk back to my campsite, I looked at the canyon wall across the creek in front of me, and I noticed the silhouette of a second figure being projected next to mine. I immediately swung around and looked behind me to see who was there, but saw nothing. I turned back around, and this time saw only my silhouetted figure again and breathed a sigh of relief. I figured it must be my mind playing tricks on me. As I walked back to my tent, I noticed that the usual night noises had returned, and I breathed a sigh of relief. "It's all in your head, Kate," I assured myself. When I got back to my tent, I decided that I would just finish up working in the morning, and I climbed into my sleeping bag and zipped up the tent to keep out any bugs. The fire was getting low, and I figured I would just leave it burning overnight so it would be easier to put out in the morning. I fell asleep almost immediately, as I usually do most nights. A few hours later, I woke up suddenly, which was unusual since I am usually a very heavy sleeper. I opened my eyes, and the first thing I noticed was that once again everything was completely silent. Except for one thing, I heard a faint humming coming from close by outside my tent. It was the tune I had been humming to myself earlier as I worked. I turned my head to look towards the side of my tent where the humming was coming from, and through my tent, I could see the silhouette of a person sitting by the fire. I immediately froze with fear and couldn't turn away. I watched the silhouette for a second, and suddenly I saw the head turn towards my tent and look my direction. As the figure turned, the humming got intensely loud, and it sounded like the humming was coming from inside my own head. And suddenly, the entire campfire went completely out. At that moment, my fight or flight response kicked in, coupled with adrenaline from the fear, and I stood up, threw my tent from the ground up over my head, and bolted. I don't think I had ever run that fast in my entire life, and I did not turn around even once to look behind me. I could hear the humming following right behind me until I reached the edge of the canyon where the trail broke out into the open, and as soon as I exited the canyon, the humming stopped. I didn't stop running until I reached the parking lot at the trailhead, and luckily my car keys were in the pocket of the jacket I was wearing. I got in my car, drove off, and left a message for my boss that someone else would have to finish the project the next day. I made my coworker bring my tent back for me, and when I got it back, it had been slashed up like someone had taken a knife to it. He asked me what happened, but I couldn't bring myself to tell him the truth, so I just said it must have been an animal. Needless to say, I never returned to that canyon, and I passed up all future projects that involved that area of the park. That's all for this story, but I'll try to update every few days with another one when I am in town and have Wi-Fi again. Part 2. The second story I'm going to share with you happened in the wintertime when I was 21 years old. I was working as a ranger with the USFS United States Forest Service out in Arkansas. Wintertime was generally pretty slow, but it was hunting season in that area, so I spent most of my days indoors issuing permits and answering questions and such. Occasionally, we would get a complaint about hunters, so I would venture out to see if any laws were being broken and give my lecture about hunting etiquette. Maybe even get to give out a ticket if I cared that particular day. But most days were routine, slow, boring, and uneventful. Around mid-season, we started getting weird reports coming in about once or twice a week from hunters about finding deer carcasses that just looked, well, unnatural to say the least. Most of the reports weren't very detailed or thorough, but they all consistently included the fact that there was no blood around the carcasses and no visible wounds. Yet it was obviously a predatory kill. One group of hunters went up to one of the carcasses they found and described it as being skin and bone, as if everything inside it had been sucked clean out. The reports all included one other detail too. In each case, the hunters had heard what sounded like a male deer vocalizing mating calls and had followed the calls in hopes of landing a buck for their hunting trophy case. The other rangers and I took note of all these details, and after the fifth report or so, we went out one day and canvassed the area the reports were coming from, attempting to find evidence to corroborate the reports we were getting, but we came up short. Although these reports were certainly weird, we didn't see it as a potential threat to anyone's safety, so we didn't see any reason to prioritize finding the culprit killing off these deer. However, about a month after the odd deer carcass reports started coming in, we got an emergency call that two hunters had been reported missing. A father and son had left their home the day before to go on an afternoon of hunting and family bonding, and had failed to return that evening. My co-workers and I all immediately geared up, paired up in twos, and set out in search of the missing persons. Each of our pairs was assigned a section of the forest to search, and my partner and I happened to be assigned the area where the deer carcass reports had been. We drove around to every known parking area to attempt to locate the missing father's vehicle, and at the third spot we checked, we found it. We searched the vehicle and found a map circling an area that wasn't too far away, and we assumed that was the area the father and son were going to be hunting in. We radioed our co-workers to let them know what we found, and then we set off into the woods to continue our search. We found some tracks that looked like they could belong to the missing pair, so we began to follow those. The trail of footprints led us for about a mile and a half, where suddenly they gave way to drag marks. With our alert senses heightened, my partner and I followed the drag marks until we reached a large rock formation with a cave. About 10 feet in from the entrance to the cave, we saw their bodies. Before entering, we shone our flashlights into the cave to see if the predator was home. And although we didn't see the predator, what we saw was even worse. Carcasses. Tons of carcasses piled on top of each other, mostly deer, some smaller animals. Luckily, no other humans, from what we could see at least. We entered the cave to retrieve the two hunters' bodies, and when we got close, we noticed that their bodies looked just like the ones we had been getting reports of. Skin and bone, no visible wounds, but completely void of all blood, muscle, tissue, anything. It was like someone had deflated them or vacuumed them out or something. We radioed the rest of our team with our GPS coordinates and to let them know we had located the bodies, and we were instructed to wait there with them until the rest of the team arrived so everything could be properly documented. My partner and I walked back out of the entrance of the cave and decided to sit on a nearby fallen tree to wait for the rest of our team. We talked for a few minutes about what could have done this to the hunters, but neither of us could come up with any ideas. Suddenly, we heard a large branch behind us snap. We turned around, and what we saw, I still don't know to this day what it truly was. About 20 yards from us was this thing. It was a black bear, a big black bear, but something was just off about it. It was more like a large creature had taken a black bear's skin and head and was wearing it like a slightly ill-fitting full-body costume. The way it moved and walked wasn't right. It was almost like it didn't know how to properly use its limbs. And then I noticed the eyes. I don't know what those eyes belonged to, but they certainly were not bear eyes. They were large and white with colored irises, like human eyes, but much bigger. We both sat there in shock for a moment, before my partner reached to his side to draw his gun. Just as he did this, the creature stood up on its back legs, tilted its head so far I thought it would have broken its neck, opened its mouth, and let out a call. This, however, was not a bear call. It was a male deer mating call. Right then, my partner snapped to action and fired off his gun at the creature. The creature turned away from us and took off on its back two legs, awkwardly lumbering off deeper into the woods. My partner fired two more shots in that direction, I think more as a reaction than an actual attempt to hit it. As soon as it was out of sight, we both sat there in silence for a few minutes. My partner's hands were shaking, and I was too frozen with fear to move. 5 or so minutes later, we heard the rest of our team arriving down the trail. They asked about the gunshots, and my partner quickly answered that it was just a bear, and then looked at me, silently agreeing with me that we would keep what we saw to ourselves. Although it was odd to everyone that a black bear would be out wandering the woods when it should be hibernating, it wasn't completely unheard of for a bear to be awoken and go out on an aggressive rampage. So that's what we put in the official report. A couple days after the incident, my partner quit his job, packed up his house, and moved back to where his parents lived in the suburbs. I spent the rest of my time in Arkansas trying to put the incident out of my mind. I never saw the creature again, but every so often, when out on patrol, I would hear a male deer mating call, and I couldn't help but wonder if it was truly a deer this time, or the creature I saw in the woods that day, trying to lure in its next victims. That's a wrap for this one. I have to head out to the woods for work in the morning, but I'll try to get down into town in a couple days to update again.